erste Frage, die ich hätte, wäre, was ist Literatur?
Das ist ja großartig, dass du gleich mal mit einer ganz kleinen Frage anfängst. Das Medium, in dem es keine einfachen Antworten gibt, keine Schwarz-Weiß-Welten, in dem Sprache nicht einfach nur Gebrauch ist, sondern ihre Eigenheiten, ihre Musik, ihre Schönheiten entfalten kann. Die Intelligenz eines Romans zeigt sich in seiner Form. Also es ist Gestaltete, es ist Formenbildung, es ist Architektur, Gedankengebäude bauen, sinnliche Gebäude bauen mit Worten. Und zugleich ist für mich als Leserin Literatur immer ein Nährstoff, ein Nahrungsmittel gewesen. Und ich lese ja oder schreibe auch selbst Dinge wie den Kanalschwimmer, weil ich niemals im Leben durch einen eiskalten Ärmelkanal schwimmen möchte, aber es durch die Literatur auch wirklich mit allen Sinnen und leibhaftig erleben kann.
Mhm. Danke.
Das große Gefährt der Imagination und der Empathie.
Mhm. Mhm. Danke. So the second question is, that was a wonderful answer by the way, why do you write?
I didn't know, when I was a young person, I didn't know that I would want to become a writer. I was an avid, always have been, an avid reader. And in the end, after having studied law and having studied philosophy and literature, I just felt that I somehow needed to try out what this writing, poetry and fiction could possibly be. And in the end, I think that hopefully I do write or still write because it's what I'm able to do best. And because for me, it unites my basic curiosity and my ability for empathy. And it brings together body and mind. I'm a person who is senseless. I'm interested in, you know, in eating, in smelling, in feeling of the body, and but I have a mind, and rational thinking is attractive to me as well. And in writing, the two of them can go together. I always have to think of Kant and his famous dictum. Like, I don't know that in English actually. It's like Begriffe ohne Anschauungen sind leer, und Anschauungen ohne Begriffe sind blind. And all this. Concepts and centrality, and they go together, they come together in a formed work of words, if you work with words, if you invent the form, because the in the form you would have a lot of thinking as well, and I can do some research, and I like that as well. I think our realities, the realities we live in, have become very complex, and literature is a wonderful medium to show that, to analyze it, and to play around with it.
Yeah, the quote is in English: "Concepts without intuition are empty, and intuition without concepts are blind."
Yeah, but intuition is a bit limiting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not.
So the concept, the German concept of Anschauung,
is much
really,
more.
Yes, and it really makes you think of there are the senses, your eyes, your ears, everything, and there's the world, you know, which comes to it, and then it goes into your body, and within your body, it's already being transformed. And then it's the way how you look at the world, and how the world looks back to the world through your body.
Yeah. And when you said that about in your first answer about nutrition or Nahrungsmittel almost, would you say that's part of that of the motivation to write, of the drive to write?
Probably, because I experience this as a reader, that it really nourishes me. It nourishes not only my thinking, but also my ability to experience my world. I think literature also is a means of enriching you. So it sharpens your perception. It sharpens your knowledge about people. It really broadens your, not only your horizon, the entire capsule of the world. And because I think in a way literature saved me when I was a child and a young person, and so I felt probably because of that it's very enticing and wonderful to try to become a writer myself. And of course I keep reading and I feel kind of nourished by poetry, for example, might be a good example mm-hmm. actually, because it kind of works on these two levels. Of course, a poem can tell me something about, I don't know, an animal or a foreign world or something like that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you listen to a poetry reading, and I've listened to many where I even didn't understand the language, you still get something. It's very musical. Mm-hmm. Perhaps this is the closest
analogy,
yes, exactly. I think it's nourishment mm-hmm. for the body as well,
mm-hmm.
or for this transfer within us. So we are, I think, this dichotomy of body and mind, mm-hmm. It's famous, it's old, it's always been wrong, but it helps to kind of get organized or mm-hmm. talk about concepts. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's much more interesting actually to think about the circles or the circuits or how it works and how energy moves from one level to the other, how it's being transformed in doing so, how all these various processes of translation happen. And
mm-hmm.
since I'm such a linguistic animal, I've just always kind of focused on mm-hmm. on the translation of word or words mm-hmm. into languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. The third question is, what is, for you, the relation of literature to the political?
I always felt that I'm a contemporary writer. So I wouldn't be interested in writing a historical novel which is set mm-hmm. in the medieval ages, and that's it. So I don't think that any kind of language is non-political, because each word we use comes along with a history. Sometimes it's not so, you know, it's not so important. If the word "so," for example, I'm not so interested in its historical or social history, but there are so many words, even things like simple words like chair and table are full of cultural histories and presuppositions about right behavior and wrong behavior. And so all of this is political. And just think of all the kind of gendered metaphors and historic words we don't want to use any longer, because they were used in order to humiliate people, to express relationships of power between people. I spent the last 20 years writing novels which really kind of tackle this question, because even if there are historical events, they are political for us today. Mm-hmm. There is a connection. There is no apolitical writing, because we are interested in history because of its impact onto our present or the futures we can imagine. And this way of how traumatic events, wars, forced migration really reverberate through families and are not contained in those who kind of directly experience it, but are passed on to generation after generation. This immediately is a very good link, I think, to show how literature which deals with this topic, I thought of necessity, needs absolutely is political as well, because these questions are important for our present lives, because we have to decide how we deal with forced migration globally, for example, and with warfare and the consequences of war. And I don't think that history ever repeats itself. Of course it doesn't, because all the circumstances change continually. But we can learn something, and this learning doesn't happen on this kind of very basic level of A to B to C and this and this, that happened. But we can learn something about emotional structures. We can learn about structures of memory. We can learn about the concatenation of our bodies, which actually there, literature for me always has also been a rich thesaurus, a rich store of knowledge about bodies and how people connect and interact beyond what we can explain with, let's say, means invented by science. and I need to tell you this, we can kind of delete it from the interview, but I went to this talk of Fritz Breithaupt the other day on narrative minds. And you know, it's so basic what he does. He kind of found out, the entire group found out, that we read for an emotional reward, which I raised my hand and told him, well, having been an author on stage for 25 years, I was very, very rewarded by listening to your story, because I already knew the result. You're quite right, I think. And so this is very, very basic, I think, but it's nice that they're doing this, because they come along and they try to investigate into things which are discovered to be real, but which have been described in literature really for centuries. Things like post-memory, they're always even mentioned in the Bible. And so why don't we use this treasure house of literature in a much more radical way, in order to tackle the questions which kind of tackle us in our contemporary lives, and to gain a kind of lever, to a perspective, a bit of distance, and a lever to deal with them in a new way, and a way which really pays tribute to the interconnectivity, to the interwovenness, to the netted structures of all human behavior. So this might be a bit abstract, but I think that because in literature this is always presented with the example through the emotional and rational bodies and minds of characters, that it becomes quite tangible. So now, this was another, you know, I tend to give these Sunday speeches. Sermon.
Well, I don't know if you read Richard Powers' Overstory.
No, no.
That is about the woods and the interconnectivity of biotopes of trees in the thing network theory, in the way you described. So it is
it's not
beyond
only trees.
Just the human connectivity. Yeah, thank you. But the last question is a little bit more on that, what you just said, pleasure or fun. But I thought I'd ask it, and I want to ask it other authors as well. What do you enjoy most about the writing process or literature? Your own writing as well as literature. I'm drawing it specifically on enjoyment, pleasure.
The other week we read the beginning of Georg Büchner's story. I like to call it a story. Lens. And we talked in detail, so it was close reading, not in the emphatic then, but in that sense, like very close reading. There was a translation into English and the German text, and really compared sentence by sentence. And it turned out how wonderfully composed this beginning is, because it starts with a sentence which is kind of someone is walking, and you just imagine it's a plain level ground. And then on, the entire sentences, not only semantically, but also in the flow of the language, they move upwards and downwards all the time. So it's hilly territory. This is what happens in the meaning of the word, but it also happens on an, I don't want to call it emphatic level, because this sounds much too remote. You just feel it. You read out loud, you hear it, your body tunes in as well. And I enjoy moments like that. I enjoy the craftiness of literary invention. I remember how I discovered Kleist's wonderful slash in the Marquise von O, and how he manages to transcend all kinds of censure and taboos and just tell us the story of a rape with that. It was published, it was read, it was understood. I think that signs are powerful instruments, and I just relish on new combinations. On, I feel like really a broadening of my world and my perception as well. And in the writing process, it's quite an ambivalent thing to be a writer. And I had an email recently by a student,
And she wrote to me. I was very touched by that email, because she wrote, I'm sitting here and crying over my laptop and writing to you. I need a piece of advice, because, you know, I had this wonderful idea and it doesn't seem to work out, and I don't know what to do. I really feel stuck, and I know that feeling very well. And but then sometimes there are these moments when the entire process seems to be reversed, and all of a sudden a voice, a character, a poem comes to you. And what I really like is the most beautiful paradox of writing for me is that I, as this ego eye, I feel like that I'm almost entirely, I am dissolved by what I write, by what I do, and at the same time, it's such an intense presence. It always makes me think of this book by George Steiner, of presence. Mm-hmm. This moment of presence is it's a paradox. I'm not here and I'm entirely here. Mm-hmm. It's high concentration. It's like, it's not a flow. I always feel like it's flying. It's like flying, and I'm entirely present, but without my ego. And this is wonderful, because I just feel how something, I don't know how to call it, the word reality, everything almost, kind of goes through me. And this is a necessary process, because through me, and this is me entirely, my entire me, my entire history, because as we know by neuroscientists, they now tell us, you know, that the architecture of our brain was formed and is still being formed by our real perceptions, our life experience. So it has to go through all that, but my body as well. I don't want to confine it to my head. It's really the body. I talk, I hear it, I feel it, I get goose, what's it?
Bumps
on my arms if this happens. And of course, these are not, this is kind of not the general atmosphere and mode of writing, but it needs to happen, because for me these stretches of time, sometimes it can last quite some time and sometimes it's very short, but these are the basis for the rest. And then, you know, there's a lot of revision and work and frustration and despair, and sometimes once I had published a novel and really I was so frustrated. I wanted to become a Tierpfleger, so an animal carer in a zoo, and I phoned the zoo in Berlin and asked them. I was in my 40s and they said I couldn't do that because I would take someone else's job, and so I was really frustrated. They didn't even want me to shuffle around the poo of animals, so so that's the other side of writing as well.
Thank you.
Here we are.
Thank you. That's great.
You are welcome. Yeah.